Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Welcome back, everyone. This is Greg Gazin. Each year, we have the honor of speaking with the newest international president. And for those new to Toastmasters, the international president serves as an officer of the Toastmasters International Board of Directors and as a working ambassador for the organization. As a volunteer, the president works with the board to develop, support, and refine the policies and procedures that guide Toastmasters International in fulfilling its mission. For the 2026-2027 Toastmasters year, our international president is distinguished Toastmaster Stefano S. McGee. Stefano is a senior IT executive. He holds a master's degree in military operational arts and sciences through the United States Air Force Higher Education Program. He is a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, where he shares the wonder of flying with children and young adults. He is also a leader at his local yacht club and an avid motorcycle enthusiast. Stefano has been a Toastmaster since 2005. His home club is Network Voice Toastmasters in Weymouth, Massachusetts. His profile meets Stefano McGee, DTM, 2026-2027's International President, Doesn't Sit Still by Laura Amon, appears in the September 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Stefano and his wife Jennifer have a son Tucker who attends the University of New Hampshire, and they have a beagle named Trevor. Joining us today from Weymouth, Massachusetts, Toastmasters International President, distinguished Toastmaster Stefano McGee, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
That's a lot of words, Craig. It's a pleasure to be here with you. If we're lucky, we won't have a cameo by Trevor, but it's a pleasure to be with you here today.
It's my pleasure as well, and congratulations on becoming the Toastmasters International President.
Yeah, if you'd asked me when I started Toastmasters in 2005, that was not something that I aspired to. Even if you asked me about, I don't know, even as much as 7 years ago, that's not something that I would have aspired to. Sometimes I just find myself in interesting circumstances and try to make the most of what I can out of them. So, yeah, I'm happy to be here. Happy to be your president.
You're about to take on one of the biggest leadership roles in Toastmasters. I'm wondering, how are you feeling right now, and what's been on your mind as the time is finally here after this long journey?
Yes, we finally here. Huh? It's been fun to say that this thing is years away, but that's pretty much come and gone. Huh? I think it's human to say that there is a bit of nervousness and trepidation, right? There are people that elected you without even looking, but there are people that elected you that actually said, we like this guy. We think this guy can do great things. And they've come up to me over the past many years, like, we expect good things, Stefano. And I'm like, what do you expect? Tell me more. What is this high level of expectation? It really isn't a lot. It seems like a lot of it is just, we just want to see you there. That's kind of magical. There are a number of people out there that want to see me be there simply by the fact that, look at what this, you know, Joe regular guy can do that joined Toastmasters and was just having fun in his own district. Look how far you can go in Toastmasters. And that's something that I take to heart is I've tried to tell lots of district leaders, for example, when I was interviewing folks as a candidate for international director, I would tell many of them, I'm just you 5 years in the future. No, actually, it was about 3 years in the future. And that would make their jaw drop. And I said, yeah, it is entirely within your scope and your possibility to be me or better in 3 years. And I said, that's who I am. That's who I've always been. And so that is the thing is, now that you're there, what are you going to do? How can you show? And I think the answer is what it always has been, which is be yourself, be true to yourself. And that's all that people want. And it's taken me a while to get there, but I think that's what people want is just be you, Stefano. That's enough.
That's awesome. I love the folks at the magazine. They make the most incredible headlines and titles and subtitles. And this article, the subtitle is The International President Doesn't Sit Still. And that really caught my attention. So I'm kind of curious. I see the high energy there. What's the story behind that title?
There's always something to do. I have a few t-shirts that I've collected over the past few years that really are emblematic. And, you know, one of them, of my favorites is I like my boat and maybe three other people, which is always a good conversation starter. Boating is fun. Boating is actually not very hard. docking the boat is very challenging. And for any of our members out there that are familiar with docking a boat, there's another t-shirt that says, "I'm sorry what I said while I was docking the boat," which is, if you know, you know, folks. But docking a boat, you know, harms marriages, but if you work at it, it'll be okay. But that level of challenge and working with my wife to make sure that we dock the boat safely every time we go out is great. And it's challenging. That's what I always seek out, is challenges for doing things that I feel like I should be able to do, but are challenging. Riding a motorcycle, yeah, in some cases isn't challenging, but there are a lot of things that can happen on a motorcycle that are much more challenging than there are in a car. I love that stuff. Same thing with flying. Flying is an interesting... I got into that because I've always wondered what it's like to be able to see things from up above and to actually take part in flight. To me, that's magical. You have this contraption that was created 100 years ago. Of course, many improvements have been made. But you can actually take off, leave the ground, and fly around for hours and see, go where you want to do, see what you want to see. Landing is hard. Landing is very challenging, but that's part of the fun. Part of what I do that is it's very relaxing, is kind of a weird word, because you can't focus on Toastmasters, personal problems, things at work while you're flying an airplane. You need to be locked into doing that one thing so that everything goes well. So, I mean, I like a lot of those motorsports kinds of things, driving, motorcycling, flying, boating, because they just take, I have a skill with that stuff that I enjoy trying to stretch myself. What can I do? If there are any of our members out there that are thinking they need a wheelman for anything, I am your man. I can do most everything. Trains are on my list. If I get trains down, then I've got you.
I was thinking land, sea, air, maybe space is next for you.
Ooh, that could be tough. I don't know. I feel I could handle it, but that would be tough. Pricey.
Circling back to Toastmasters again, same thing. I love Toastmasters origin stories. And Stefano, from what I understand, your wife made you give up video games and join Toastmasters. Now, is that how it actually started?
Yeah. She joined Toastmasters at one of the keynotes that some of the members have heard, where I say I wasn't terrified of public speaking. I was just terrible. But she was terrified of public speaking, and she joined Toastmasters 5 years before I did. And she would come back from her club and she'd tell me about, yeah, our president did this. This is crazy. Our vice president of education is like all the stories that you're all familiar with, right? And I would just be like, yeah. Because when she would go out, I would pull out the PlayStation, sit in front of the big screen TV and play all kinds of fun games, you know, Grand Theft Auto and different games, first-person shooters, you name it, adventure games. And it was great. Nobody was in the house. Nobody bothered me. It was a great hour and a half, no, 2 hours of just time to have fun and play. But then she started, our club had this thing where they called guest night, and it required our members to go and bring in a guest. And she was out of people to bring. And she's like, well, I got to bring somebody. And I'm the president this year. I got to bring somebody. Why don't you show up? And I'm like, I don't want to go to your crazy club. You tell me about all the stuff going on. I don't want to go there. But she kept twisting my arm. And so I went and I had a great time. Then I didn't go back the next time or the next time. And the next guest night came along. I went again and it was fun. It was like, I'm having a lot of fun at home sitting on the couch too. But I started eventually going on my own with her, and I took different roles. Like I was a timer. I did joke of the day. I did thought of the day. And I was having fun. I was starting to go on my own, still a guest. And eventually I got to the point where they're like, well, you've done all the roles, Stefano, except you haven't given a speech. And I'm like, ooh, that sounds like fun. I said, well, you got to join though. You can't give a speech unless you join. And that's how they got me. Oh, no. I think I was a guest for like a good 6 months before I actually joined.
Yeah, you were filling seats. You started as a tag along.
Yeah.
At what point did you think to yourself, I'm going to lead this organization at the highest level?
Never, Craig.
Voluntold, were you?
No, I would say probably the last part of when I was serving as international director. So I would say sometime around the middle of 2021 was when I said, you know, maybe I should give it a go and see if our members are interested in having me as their international president. And that was not something that I thought of. Even while I was on the board of directors, I said, you know what? being on our board of directors is quite an honor, and that is pretty good. And why should I aspire to do more? Because that is not something that many of our members get to do. And I should just be proud of that and move on. But I said, you know, maybe there is more. Maybe there's more that I could do to help out our membership for a little bit longer. And so I gave it a go. I wasn't successful the first time, but the second time, yes, I was. So here we are, just a few years after that.
I was thinking there was a little more foreshadowing there because your first role at the club was club president. You didn't start off at sergeant at arms. It was right into the president role.
That is correct. So the funny story behind that is that we had a friend of ours. She's since moved away, but she was in the club just before I got there. And she was a good friend of mine, of my wife and ours, for many years until she left the U.S. She's retired in Mexico now. And she said to me, probably a year after being in Toastmasters, she says, you know what? I think you're going to be international president someday. And I gave her the look. What are you on? Pretty crazy? There's no way. There is no way. That makes no sense. I don't even know what that is, nor do I care. If you want foreshadowing, that was it. Probably 1 year into Toastmasters, my club, a club member said, you will be international president one day.
Wow.
I said, you're nuts. She was right.
Looking through the article, I mean, obviously you're really big, not only on leadership, but also on communication. And I found it really interesting that you had mentioned in the article, it was mentioned in the article, that one of your responsibilities while you were in the military involved volunteering to deliver bystander awareness training. So that's not a term I don't think that everyone is familiar with, myself included. So I'm curious, what is it and how has Toastmasters, let's say, influenced the way you approach that type of training?
I would say sometime in the 20-teens, the military, or at the very least the Air Force, determined that there was an increase in the incidence of sexual violence in the military. And they further determined that part of this could be avoided if the people that were around the situation saw what was happening and intervened. Those people are bystanders. And so the training was to help members of the military understand when bad things were about to happen and the different ways that you could go about intervening. How did Toastmasters help? Presenting a difficult subject in front of 400 people that you didn't know requires some degree of courage, some degree of self-confidence that I would definitely not have had it not been for Toastmasters. So we looked at the content and I said, this is going to be uncomfortable, but I will need to find a way to make this approachable, to make this non-judgmental, but to get across the importance of when you see something, do something about it. And it can be as easy as intervening by spilling a drink or causing something to happen that distracts, or it could be very upfront in your face, this isn't right, this doesn't need to happen, and how to determine when to use those different situations, how to use them. It was really important to me to be a part of that because it was something that we need to work on. And I would never have been able to have the confidence to do that if it wasn't for Toastmasters. So that's how they intersect.
Not only is that something that's fairly complex, but it's also very emotional-based.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Less emotional, of course. You also mentioned the article about taking complex data-heavy applications and making them understandable. So for a learning moment, what does that look like in practice?
If you go back about a few years ago, I was working on a project where we were talking about, it was around pandemic times, we were talking about how an article that was distributed online by the company I worked for, how well it had done. And I had said something along the lines of, it is generated around, let's say, 15 terabytes worth of traffic. And this was significant because it was above our last one by a significant margin. But I realized that I'm talking to a bunch of educational types, business types, and the number 15 terabytes meant nothing. And so I said, I understand that that might not seem like a lot to you. So instead, let's go back to your place. Sit down on your couch and start binge watching Netflix. for 3.3 years watching high definition video just to our home. That's how much traffic. And I said, that's no night. That's all nights, all weekends, unlimited popcorn and soda. Adding that bit of humor and contextualizing so people go, wow, that is a lot of data. Or if you look at the Library of Congress and think of how many books are in there and how much that weighs, if you take that and multiply it by 10, that is, oh, wow. So it's the same as how many Olympic-sized swimming pools or whatever, but it's taking technical data and breaking it down into, even it doesn't have to be perfect, but breaking it into things like, wow, that's a lot. And you can do this with many things. Like I've seen great Instagram posts talking about how far away planets are and how far things travel, what a light year is and why that's a lot. And getting a sense of scale, explaining things like that is fun because it's trying to say, how can you turn this into something that an everyday human being who is not an astronaut, who is not an IT worker, who is not a scientist can understand? And that's for me, that's a very fun challenge.
No, it's definitely great that you can relate to someone in their own terms. So it's also, not only is it fun, but it's also very practical, especially for people who are giving presentations, perhaps to an audience that they're not familiar with. I remember that we had district leader training, we had regional leader training at the Mall of America one year. And I remember going into the mall, we had exercises, believe it or not, we had fun in the mall, we had exercises there. And when we got there, they gave us this fun fact card. And it said that in the mall, it gave the size of the mall, how many million cubic meters or square meters or whatever it happened to be. But it said it was an equivalent of parking 37 or 47, now I can't remember the number, 747 jets in the mall to give you that sort of relevant or relative size.
Yes, yes.
So we touched upon communication. Let's go back to leadership a little. And I love that you say that your love of leadership comes from asking why. And I'm curious, where did that curiosity begin?
That's a question that I had to figure out on my own myself. It's not something that was obvious to me. And I think it goes back to when I was at the United States Air Force Academy as a freshman. And by definition, freshmen at a United States military academy are not treated well on purpose. And I often wondered, what is the sensibility behind this? What if this is truly the most intelligent human beings that you were able to pull out of high schools across the country, why do we treat them so badly? That doesn't make any sense to me. And so that kind of bred the why do we do these things? And it led me to a life of leadership and asking why. Why are things, when I joined my club, why are things the way that they are? Oh, that's interesting. Why? Maybe if I got into leadership, there'd be a way that we could change that. And that quickly turned into, maybe we can't change that. But now I know why. And when other people say, Stefano, how come we can't change that? I can explain why. And one of my favorite statements is, adults will accept the why, even if they don't like it. And I use the word adults specifically. That's why is so powerful. Because when you see something the way that it is, it's very easy to just say, well, that's the way that it is. There's nothing we can do to change it. I love to ask why and then say, why can't we change it? And not because, well, we should be able to. No. Explain why that can't be changed. There's probably a good reason for it. But when you understand the why, then you, oh, okay. No, that makes sense. I see why that is not changeable. Let's try another tack. But it's, to me, it is the antithesis of just saying, well, there we can't do anything about it. That's it. Nope. Why? Why can't we do that? And if we can't, maybe we can change it, maybe we can't, but knowing why is critical. So that's where that came about.
It's funny you mentioned adults because I remember taking myself back to when I was six. I was always asking my mom and dad, why? Go to your room. Why? Clean that up. Why?
Why? Yes, I went through that with my son as well.
I guess we've come full circle.
Yes.
For some reason, that motorcycle just popped into my head. Just wondering, did you know Dan Rex actually drives a motorcycle as well? And it's funny because I've interviewed him a few times and I went back to the transcripts to see if I can find out what kind of bike he rode. And it's funny, that question never came up. Any idea?
He rides a Honda Africa Twin, I believe, is what he's riding now. An Africa Twin. So it's a tall off-road bicycle. It's just a motorcycle.
And what do you ride?
I ride a BMW R1300 RT. It's a sport tour, a road bike.
Yeah, do you get out a lot?
So I just purchased a new one in January, and so I've been trying to get out on it more because it has more tech. If you think that everything that is cool about motorcycles is just being out on the open road and getting the wind in your hair or whatever you have left of it, then that is part of it. But for me, as an IT guy, I also very much enjoy the technology behind it, that motorcycles now have anti-lock brakes, satellite radio, heated seats, heated hand grips. Now they can shift on their own for you if you so choose. Just all kinds of cool tools that are bringing the motorcycle. Oh, radar cruise control. Who'd have thunk it? So all of these really interesting tools that will say, oh, hey, you are approaching something much faster than you should be. I am going to begin to apply the brakes for you. Wow. Blind spot detection systems on a motorcycle? It's amazing. So a lot of safety features that they've added. And of course, it still is fun to ride and to ride through the countryside and smell what nature brings to your nose, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's a wonderful thing. So yeah, I still do ride.
It sounds like for a lot of us, Toastmasters, our work life, our personal life, our fun life seem to overlap, whether it's motorcycles or in one case I see the yacht club. You've decided to take on a leadership role. So what draws you to that?
Oh, Greg, it's the why again. I intended to join a yacht club simply because the rates were cheaper to store your boat there and you'd get to meet interesting people. Well, Greg, you do get to meet interesting people. But then once you've served in Toastmasters in various leadership roles, you're drawn to when people start complaining about, well, this is this, and why does this cost so much? And we're back to that again, Greg. It's, well, I don't know. Let's go find out. Let's go talk to the right people and see what's going on. But as soon as you start talking to the right people, they're like, you asked the right questions. You should be in leadership. And so that's how that happened. And the worst part of all is that I got pulled into that right alongside at the same pace as the Toastmaster Executive Leadership Path. So the year that I'll be running the Yacht Club almost exactly coincides with the year that I'll be international president at Toastmasters, which is not what I ever should have done. But here we are. But yeah, it's really just when being a sucker that says when somebody needs something, you get it done. If somebody needs some leadership to say, okay, here's what we need to do. Let's explain the why to people. Let's help them understand why things cost what they do, whatever. You need to do that. And again, for Toastmasters, I would never have taken on that role at a yacht club if it wasn't for Toastmasters, ever. But they're like, wow, you're well-spoken. You explain things well. You know how to make PowerPoints that aren't so busy or that make sense. I'm like, this is Toastmasters. So, yeah.
It's funny. It leads perfectly into my next question, because in the article you mentioned about you want people to, instead of saying or thinking, I can't do that or I could never do that, you want them thinking, I could do that. So obviously this is a case, in a particular case with the Yacht Club. I'm curious. Now, you mentioned organizations. Obviously, you're helping out the Yacht Club, and I'm sure there's other organizations you've helped out as well. Is there some particular example of a person whose life may have been changed because you believed in them before they believed in themselves? You helped them take that, I can't do that, into, I can do that.
For sure, in Toastmasters. And of course, it always happens. You only find out about these things many years later is how it usually works out. Yeah, there have been some folks that I've said, you should jump into leadership. You can do this role. We can help you get through there. I mean, we do this in Toastmasters all the time, but it turns into a life-changing thing where they learn that when they're successful, when you help them be successful at whatever the heck it is they're doing, they start believing that, well, I was wrong to think that I couldn't do that because I can. And then they translate that into, what else can I do that I didn't think I could do before? And then you see them blossom and take it out. It doesn't happen every time. Some people need to be shepherded through the multiple roles, but there are folks that once you show them you were wrong about yourself, what we saw in you is a more accurate representation of what you see in the mirror. And that's amazing to some people. Like, yeah, we see what you don't see, and you can do this. And it is amazing when you can. I mean, that is the crux of Toastmasters. That's what makes our primary product, our number one seller, is confidence. And that is why, I mean, that's why I'm still here. People are like, why are you still at Toastmasters after 20 years? I said, well, number one, I'm trying to learn how to give speeches like Barack Obama. Not going so well. I'm almost there, though. I'm still working. But number two is you have such a capacity to change lives, to make somebody else's life different simply by a comment, an evaluation, believing that they can do and make, and spending some of your time, which you can't make more of, spending that, giving that to somebody else. That is the ultimate gift. And when you see that turn into, wow, I can go do this other thing. I can go run an organization. Yes, you can. I can go take charge of that thing. Yes, you can. You got this. That's worth an unlimited amount of money. That is once in a lifetime. I don't know about you, Greg, but there are many things in the world that you can pay to do. Being able to give some of your time to change somebody else's life, that is purely a human endeavor. Only a human can do for somebody else like that. So that's why I'm still here, because there's still more lives to change.
That seems to be the nature of Toastmasters. People will join for one reason, but they stay for another. I mean, I have to admit, I am a lifelong learner, but of course, the amount of learning I'm doing is a lot less than it was when I first joined. Yeah. But the feeling of giving back, the things that you can do by giving back, doing this podcast, can make a huge, absolutely huge difference.
Yeah.
As we look forward to this Toastmaster year, I'm not going to ask you about your big vision for the organization. I'm just going to ask, what are you most looking forward to?
I was actually just talking with somebody about that very recently. And they said, you know, what do you want to be remembered by? And I was like, well, on one hand, people will be like, oh, what kind of things are you going to put into practice? And so, well, I guess there's two sides of it. For me, I would love to have most people, you'll never get to them all, most people remember me as being an honest, straightforward, transparent guy that was easy to talk to, that they don't feel judged when they're talking to us. So that would be huge. And then the second side of that is just to have our members understand that the future of this organization is entirely within their hands. They can control inviting one new member. They control the culture of their club. They are a part of whether it becomes distinguished. If they do those things, just in their club, not in the rest of the world, just in their club, they will change a life. I guarantee it. It doesn't have to come from from world headquarters and the board of directors, the region advisor, even a district director. No, the magic of Toastmasters, the future of Toastmasters rests in the club. And once our members understand that and how much agency they have in the growth of our organization, whew, we are back to ridiculous levels of growth. That's my belief. That's what I'd love to see accomplished this year.
That's awesome. Of course, you're a member of the Yacht Club, and Toastmasters is a pretty big ship to steer. It's a huge organization in many countries around the world. What's one of the challenges you think that you would like to tackle this year?
There's a few, and the big one is just around the club, making sure that all of our clubs are emblematic of what we can do for, well, not just our existing members, but for new members. I'd love to see every club that a prospective member walks into be one that they have to join, that they're compelled to join. That would be huge, is just to be able to create the culture in the organization of how do I make my club so awesome that people, as soon as they walk through the door as a guest, are eager to pay that day. That's what I'd love to be able to tackle first, is how do we do that? How do we create that culture? And it's difficult because there are well over 10,000 clubs. But as we found out, as I was looking at the numbers earlier, there are 2,000 smedley distinguished clubs out there that have apparently figured something out, hitting all 10 of our club goals and 25 plus members. That's fantastic. So how can we make more clubs like that, that are just so well at accomplishing our goals and representing Toastmasters well? That's the big thing for me. And it's difficult because you can't go to 12,000, 13,000 clubs. Can't.
So before we wrap up, to continue on that vein, what is one, perhaps a suggestion for an action item clubs can take to make some of this happen?
Support all of your members in achieving excellence. That's it. That is both the easiest, what is it? It is simple, yet hard to do. Is how can you support every one of your club members, not the whole district, every one of your own club members, from that DTM that's been rolling around for 20 years to the person that just joined last month? How are you supporting their needs as a member and making sure they get what they came for? A lot of what makes them happy, what makes them want to come back, is the club culture, is the club experience, that we clap all the time. I know it's crazy. We clap all the time that people are, hi, Greg, nice to see you again. Hey, Greg, we noticed that you missed the last couple of meetings. Is something going on? Something that we can help you with? And no, we don't mean Toastmasters. Like, do you have something personal that you might need some help with? We are here for you. You're part of the family. Creating those connections. People like you and I, Greg, will never leave because it's a network that we can't give up. That is the ask. Create that culture at every club with every member.
I think that's certainly some sage advice. And folks, if you've enjoyed getting to know our new international president and learning more about the person behind the role, I hope you'll share this episode with your friends and family and fellow Toastmasters. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And now you can subscribe and never miss an episode by visiting toastmasterspodcast.com/subscribe. And be sure to read Laura Amon's profile, Meet Stefano McGee, DTM, 2026-2027's International President, Doesn't Sit Still, which we now know that's obvious. And that's in the September 2026 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. And Stefano, for listeners who would like to reach out, connect with you, or continue the conversation, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to do that is just to send me an email. Yes, I am of that age bracket. So you can reach me at S as in Sierra, SMCGHEE at gmail.com. So SSMcGee@gmail.com. You'll find me there, and I tend to respond at a reasonable rate. So I'll be looking forward to hearing from you.
And we'll certainly put a link to that in the show notes. Stefano McGee, thank you so much for taking the time. It was a pleasure and an honor to meet you, and all the best for the upcoming year.
Thank you, Greg. Hope to see you around.